I apologize for all the technical difficulties. Actually, it's very fitting when we talk about iconic, the word iconic. I assume most of us are familiar with what the expression iconic means. But just in case, iconic of relating to or having the characteristics of an icon, widely recognized and well-established, distinctive excellence. Right? We talk about iconic pictures, for example. Here are some very classic iconic pictures, right? Michael Jordan taking off at the foul line. That's an iconic, it's a classic picture, right? Man on the Moon, Lou Gehrig over there. This to me is the iconic Torres Shraga picture. Right? If you go and Google Torres Shraga, one of the premier pictures that come up is this one right over here. See Rosh Hashiva, some Rubaim. Which is goofy why it's iconic. Rabbi Shimon and I have really gotten to know each other lately. The reason it's iconic to me is I always like, before I was part of Shraga, this picture was already out there. I always wondered, like, what's going on in that meeting? Everyone looks so serious, right? Something big is happening, right? I figured, though, perhaps what they're really talking about is what should we choose about on Tuesday? Because when I first came to Torah Shraga and I was introduced to this shmooze, I took it very, very seriously. And the reason I did is because it's such a great opportunity for a band to look at specific issues and needs of the Talmidim and to try to express themselves and try to communicate a very important message. So I start to get nervous as soon as Rabbi Olshan hands out the schedule when your shmooze date is, right? And he's generally been very kind to me. He's kept me towards the end of the year, right? In the beginning, and it gave me a lot of time to think about it because I really want to come up with something that is serious and needed. So this time I was having a lot of trouble. Such an excellent group of Talmidim. Where's the needs? What's the thing that I could perhaps add to? And then it hit me a few weeks ago when I was sitting in Rabbi Ifra's, and please tell him, got the shout out, Rabbi Ifra's shmoozed a few weeks ago, when he was speaking about achieving peak potential and raising the bar. So he came upon a series of very interesting points that elicited a lot of laughter from the crowd. What was he talking about? So he was talking about how there are certain distractions that sometimes get in the way of achieving our full potential in Ruchnius. One of them that's not on the bad list was, of course, playing sports, right? As we could see, even Rebbeim participate in the playing of sports. Playing of sports is a very healthy activity. No one could ever criticize that. But where did Rabbi Ifra find potential weakness? Spectating sports, or even worse, as he said, fantasy sports. And what I found fascinating, right, was everybody was laughing as he was describing things to such a degree that it triggered in my mind an understanding that we all, right, and I myself was laughing as much, we all must identify with it, right? We must really realize it's so true what he's saying. It's true that we do these kind of silly things where we get obsessed with sports and obsessed with teams and all that kind of thing. And don't worry, that's not my topic, certainly not my topic today, right? And we're laughing because we realize that it's stupid. We realize it is, and we realize we're making fun of ourselves. You know, especially the line about how we're, you know, when our team wins, it's something that we had to do with it. And everything about it was very, very funny, right? But what really got to me was in the middle of that, when I thought Rabbi Ifra was hammering home his yesod, two guys, and I won't mention any names, sitting right next to me, right at that very moment, were on their phones doing it, involved in fantasy sports. And I was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable to me. Right? You know, it's funny. It was funny up to a point. But what it said to me is that there's somehow a complete and utter disconnect between what we intellectually know is frivolous, what we intellectually know is a waste of time, and what we actually do. Somewhere along the line, we're not communicating with ourselves. Our minds and our actions are not in sync. Now, this is, of course, there's no sin in any of the things that we're talking about. There's no sin really involved in participating and playing with fantasy sports and spectating sports. There's no sin. So what's the big deal? Who cares? So I do it. I know it's stupid and I know it's a waste of time, but that's what I do. But I think that's a mistake. And that's part of what I'm going to try to elaborate upon. I think it's a mistake to ever allow yourself to fall into the simple position of letting your actions and your activities be disconnected from what your insides are telling you is really the correct way to behave and to act. Because ultimately, when you do that, even though that activity per se is not an avera, ultimately what it does is it develops a personality, as I will demonstrate, that is fully capable, unfortunately, of getting involved in serious events. Think what the question comes down to: who is the real me? Right? What I'm designing here is really the following. We are people. We consist of a real us, and we do things. We're starting with the premise that sometimes the things we do don't represent the real us. Right? The real us is the aware individual, and yet we're aware of something that's stupid, and we do it anyway. So I started to think, how exactly do I get to the bottom of understanding why this happens to people? Why do people fall into this trap of disconnecting their actions and their activities from who they really are and the inside of themselves? So I went to Chochma Bevelin Tamen because it's, you know, an okay place to start. And I said, what do psychologists and philosophers have to say about this? So very interesting things. Aristotle says, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. Now, what he means by that, to me, is quite frightening, if it's true. What Aristotle is saying is, look, bottom line is, what counts is what you do. That's what the world sees. That's what's going to make things happen. That's what's going to create the chalos. What you actually do. And he's telling me that what I actually do, whether or not the real me approves of it, and whether the real me thinks it's stupid or not, that is who you really are going to be. And therefore, excellence is not an act, but a habit. Do you know what that means? That means excellence is not something you achieve through bechira and accomplishment, but excellence means get the good habits, right? Just by rote, achieve excellence. Even though it might be completely disconnected from you, and who knows how he even defines excellence. Carl Jung, on the other hand, has quite a different emphasis. Very, very famous psychologist. Your vision will become clear only when you can look into your own heart. Who looks outside dreams, who looks inside awakes. What's he getting at? He's getting at, no, I don't like the Aristotelian approach here. What we need to do is not just be satisfied with some habitual activities and say that's us. What we need to do is find out the real you and work with that. And let that manifest itself in what you do. Frozen. So I'm one of those people who are Hasidishly, challenged. But here's an area where I think when it comes to trying to dissect an individual personality and to try to understand the interworkings between the way we act and the way we behave and the real inside of us, I think Hasidus has a real advantage. And they start, this is actually taken from Tanya, this quote really gets us into the right frame of mind for understanding this phenomenon and how we're going to work with it and improve it. Each of us has an inner experience and an outer expressive garment. That's what we've been talking about. Each of us has the real us that's inside, and we have this outer expressive garment. Our guf, our actions, is this expression of the real us. There are 10 essential powers or traits of the soul categorized as intelligence or emotions. That's all very complicated. I'll leave that to Rabbi Olshan to explain in greater depth. But the bottom line is, we define the real inside us as a personality. Our souls are derived from Hashem. Therefore, the powers of the neshama reflect the divine personality within us. Okay, so this gave me a start. I said, okay, the real us is our personality. How does our personality relate to our actions? What's a personality? It's what makes a man who he is, the inherent characteristics that define his character, the way he carries himself, his attitude, the way he approaches every aspect of life makes up his personality. All of these things are pre-decision, pre-action. But the real you is going to be represented by personality. The challenge then is quite simple. What can we do to identify and improve our true personalities? Once we could do that, then if we can get to our true personalities, perfect our true personalities, then we can have these expressive garments, our actions. They will follow nicely from a positive-oriented soul. So how do I go about doing that? How do I get to my personality and affect change? Well, what I'm about to show you are actual papers. These are actual journal, peer-reviewed papers. So one possibility is, if we get to somebody's personality and we're not happy with it, this study looked at, well, what about head trauma as a means of changing that person's personality, right? Now, everybody here looks so serious. I can't believe that you're taking this that seriously. Give them some ideas. The good news is they found severity of injury was of no significance in predicting the extent or pattern of personality change. So that's not a serious way to do it. We're not going to bang somebody over the head and get them to change their personality. Get them to change their real essence. This was another suggestion, right? Everybody knows, you know, your personality is in your heart, right? So a serious group of physicians came up with this idea. Perhaps we could show that the personality really is intrinsic to the heart. We're going to do a heart transplant, and we'll see if the person's personality changed. What do you think happened? Here, by the way, is that's the transplanted heart. Keep calm, it's only a heart transplant. They concluded, absolutely not. I won't go into the data too much. But that's not going to do it either. So in terms of changing our personalities, we're not going to do it through banging us over the head. We're not going to do it by having a heart transplant. Now, I promise anyone who doesn't know Seth Grossman is someone I've been learning with now for a few years, and he keeps asking me to give him a shout out. I thought this was like the great opportunity to do it. There he is. And he also kind of kids me a little about this concept of Chochma Bagayim Tamin or not. So I know what his reaction would be to those previous two studies, right? You know, that's the way we can change our personalities. That seems ridiculous. However, on a more straightforward note, there are certain studies that are going to be very useful for us. The first one was called Predicting Behavior from Actions in the Past, Repeated Decision-Making, or Matter of Habit. This study was looking at whether behavior is performed, when it's performed repeatedly and becomes habitual, like all the things we tend to do, is guided by automated cognitive processes rather than being preceded by elaborate decision processes. What does this mean in simple English? Well, let me just read the conclusion. It's concluded that frequently performed behavior is often a matter of habit, therefore establishing a boundary condition for the applicability of attitude behavior models. What this established very clearly and very importantly for us is a little bit close to what Aristotle was saying, but something that's very important to realize when you're doing your self-assessment, which we should all be doing. When we start doing things that are just by rote and habit, like doing fantasy sports, in my opinion, for the most part, or doing things that have little meaning to the real us. So what is happening is that activity is not coming from you. That activity is coming from almost an automatic process that's present in your mind and your brain. It's almost a physical process that's taking place. It doesn't have any real expression of who the real you is. The big question is there anything we could do about changing it? That's really, here's the most important slide, right? If all these bad habits that we have, that we admit, we think are stupid, but we disconnect from that awareness, and we do them anyway, is there anything we could do to change them? Or are we like destined to always do the same old root bad habits? Is there any way to get to them? And that's what they were studying in this particular study. And they concluded that, in fact, changing intention is something that comes from the real you. It comes from the essence of your personality and your soul. That can affect your behavior. There is bechira. The ultimate message is, no matter how ingrained you've gotten in a bad habit that has this independent life of its own, we can reconnect to it and get control of it. The question, of course, is how? So, studies show, this summarizes what we've done up until now. While it is true that our displayed actions can be totally disconnected from our true intentions, nevertheless, our autonomous intentions, meaning our freely chosen bechira intentions, can recapture control of our actions. The key is to mold the source of our intentions, which is our true personalities, bederecha emes. If we can do that, you get to the real you, you make it into something that has a spectacular, special quality to it, the rest will follow. Then the actions will be under control. How do we do that? So last study that I looked at was, this is from 1957, beginnings of psychotherapy. Who knows if it's relevant? I think it probably still is. The necessary and sufficient conditions of therapeutic personality change. How does a psychologist, and please, Pershus, Rabbi Amala, right? What's the secret? So there are certain very, very significant components to the relationship between the individual who's going to help a person develop, perfect, improve their personality, and then get the cascade of all the good actions afterwards. What is necessary? Two persons are in psychological contact. The first, whom we shall call the client, is in a state of anxiety. The second person, whom we shall call the therapist, is congruent or integrated in the relationship, which means there's a kesher. The person who's going to help this individual has a kesher with him. They have some type of significant integrated relationship. The therapist experiences unconditional positive regard for the client. The individual who's going to be interacting with that person, who's going to try to help him enhance his personality, improve his personality, thinks very positively towards him. He's not looking down on him. He's very much connected and feels that this is a person with potential to achieve great things. The therapist experiences an emphatic understanding of the client's internal frame of reference and endeavors to communicate this experience to the client. That means he knows what's going on with that person. Perhaps, and I would say in my own experience, the best way is if he himself went through it himself. He can relate, he can understand the confusion of this person whose personality needs enhancement and improvement. The communication to the client of the therapist's emphatic understanding of conditional positive regard is to a minimal degree achieved. That's the goal, right? We want to get inside the person whose personality needs to be enhanced. We want to relate to them in positive terms. We want to have a strong relationship with them. Who does this sound like? Who's the therapist? Sounds a lot like a parent. I just wanted to get that picture in there. A Rebbe. Back to our kind of picture, right? I would say this is something everybody should be looking for in yeshiva as almost step one. It's very hard for a person to get inside themselves in an honest way. But I think it's very, very useful to have an objective, caring, positive relating person to do it with. And you know, the truth is, it doesn't have to be a Rebbe. It certainly can be a parent, right? Absolutely can be. Could be a good friend who you feel very confident, who's made it there. But part of this process is going to involve someone helping a person get in touch with themselves. Could do it internally is, and all by yourself, is something that's quite different. It all begins with the Cheshbon HaNefesh. The truth is, the Rambam was aware of our entire dilemma. And what we're going to see in the Rambam is that the Rambam is going to focus in on exactly all that we have said up until now. Which is, he's going to tell us that when it comes to a person's responsibility in developing themselves, they need to key in on their personalities, on their deos and midos. So he says in Perek Zayin of Hilchos Tshuva, Rabbi Shmuel brought this up in Shir last week, right? This is what you were referring to, I think. Al tomar she'ein tshuva ela ma'averus sheish ben ma'aseh. Don't think that the only tshuva a person could do, the only thing you could change, are actions themselves and averus per se. Kigon znus v'gezel g'nev. Ela k'shem she'tzarech adam l'shuv me'elu kachu tzarech l'chapes b'deos raus. Sheyeshlo, hilashuv mina kas, umina eva, umina kina, umina chitul, umina redifas amamon, ve'akavo, redifas amachalos, ve'yotzei behen, umina kol tzarech lachzor b'tshuva. A person has to do this. This is an essential part of tshuva, of becoming a developed person. It's not so important stopping the action. What's much more fundamentally important is getting to the personality, getting to the midos and the deos. But you should realize, he warns, the elu ha avonos kashim ma'osan sheyesh ben ma'isa. To deal with this is far, far more difficult than to do tshuva over specific averis that a person does. At least those, you can identify them, you know exactly what they are, and then you can say, I'm going to stop doing them. But when it comes to finding your personality and who you really are, that is a much more difficult thing to assess and accomplish any change with. As we know, it's very difficult. In Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, he contrasts it with doing tshuva for averus, and he says, "Kol mitzvah shevatara beinase beinlos haasei im aver adam al achas mehen chayiv lizvados lifnei akel baruchu shenemar isha isha dechulei chet ketzad misvadin omer ana Hashem chatasi avisi pashati lefanecha." When he talks about doing tshuva from regular sins, from averus, masim lo tovim, the Rambam emphasizes to whom is the avera directed. Who are we hurting when we do averus? Who do we owe our tshuva to? Who are we focused on? Kadosh Baruch Hu. In the Ochos Deos, he tells me, but when it comes to tshuva for something where your personality is defective, it's a different ballgame. Haroach averu shechata o shehalach b'derech lo tova. Halach b'derech lo tova is not an avera. It means that your entire personality is heading in the wrong direction. Mitzvah lahachziru lemutav uladio shehu chote al atzma. The emphasis of the Rambam is, unlike averos ben adam lamakom and all their averos that are masim rayim, that are really affronts to a God, when you have a defect in your personality, when you have deos and midos that are not perfected, you're hurting yourself. That's who you owe it to. What he emphasizes is really not a difference between what the Chovos HaLevavos calls Chovos HaEvarim versus Chovos HaLevavos. It's not thinking sins versus active sins. Thinking sins, having inappropriate thoughts, are the same as active sins. Those are all averos. What he's talking about is something else. Midos utchunos ha'adam atzma, the essence of the personality. That's the thing the Rambam wants us to be aware of, we can and must get into and change. And the question, of course, is how. So, once I got to this understanding that it's going to all come down to this, I want to get rid of my bad habits, my actions, but they're running on autopilot. I have no control over them. It's been proven. But I see insights from all my sources. All the Chochma and the Torah is all pointing to one thing. I need to get to that inner personality. If I can enhance it enough, strengthen it enough, I can get somewhere, and all those bad habits can go to the sun. So how do I do it? Changing a personality, identifying it, and changing it seems to be such an impossibility. Shmuel Levitt says, to change even a single element of my personality is like learning all of Shas. It seems insurmountable. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has a beautiful essay where he develops a mahalach, how a person should do it. How he identifies exactly the same issue that we are talking about right now. How does he advise somebody to get to their true personality, and if it's found lacking, do something about it to strengthen it? So he starts off by telling us that v'halachta b'drach, the fact that we're supposed to imitate Hashem, is the key beginning or starting point. What does it mean, halachta b'dracha? So there are two gemaras that present halachta b'dracha. One of them, in Sota, emphasizes ma'asim. Talks about being mevaker cholim, just like Hashem, being menachem aveilim, just like Hashem. But the other one Rav Aaron emphasizes is midos. Midos v'deos. Mahurachum afatarachum. Purposefully, Chazal present the halachta b'dracha in both contexts to realize that we're fully capable of doing each one. How do I go about doing it? How do I get and do v'halachta b'dracha when it comes to the midos of Hashem? To the midos of myself, to have them emulate the midos of Hashem? So Rav Aaron suggested, very interestingly, that what is helpful is for people to realize something that is going to sound very frightening, which is the fact that we don't live forever. It says, we say this every day, Baruch Shabbat Vahaya Olam, Baruchu, Baruch Omer Ba'oseh, Baruch Ozer Mekayeh, Baruch Oseh Bereishis. There is a redundancy in that tefillah. We're saying, Baruch Hashem, who created the world. And then we're saying again, Baruch Oseh Bereishis. Isn't it exactly the same praise? We're praising God twice for creating the world. What's the difference between the two? So the Gra points out in the Siddur that one is talking about Maaseh Bereishis, but the other one is talking about the creation of time, the creation of finitude, the creation of having life have a beginning and an end. And the Gra elaborates that life has meaning and purpose essentially because of that fact. Because of the fact that we have a finite period of time in which to accomplish what we need to, this should serve as an inspiration for a person not to put it off. Don't waste time, but get started right away. Then Rav Aaron says, so how do I do it? How do I really get inside my personality and change it? So he says, "Va'ahavta l'reicha kamocha," and the pshat in the Rambam and Sefer HaMitzvos is the key. What's going on over there? "Va'ahavta l'reicha kamocha" is a completely mental, emotional tzivur, right? You have to love your neighbor as yourself. The Torah is commanding you to love. So the Rambam is famous for pointing out in Sefer HaMitzvos that to command somebody to love is an impossibility. What can you do? What you could do is you could command specific actions that will lead to that emotion of love, that will be expressions of love, and cultivate within inside the person that. It's a very similar idea to Acharei Pulos Nimshachem Levavos of the Sefer HaChinuch. He says he also emphasizes the same yisod. So I don't know if you're noticing it, but there's a great irony developing here. We started off by saying, I have certain bad habits, actions, I just seem to do them, even though I know inside, in my honest self, they're stupid to do, I don't want to do them. I would rather be like the person inside. It's like, the moment when I realized this myself, I've told this story to some of you in a different context, but I remember when I decided to change myself completely. Many years ago, I was out playing basketball with a good friend of mine, and it was like 1 a.m. We were walking back from the gym in a very sort of unsavory neighborhood. And as we're walking by, we saw this little old lady. And I remember as I passed her, I'm thinking, wow, that little old lady's out here in the middle of the night. Boy, the right thing for me to do would be to escort her home. But I didn't. I just kept walking. My friend, who changed my life at this very moment, was walking with me. He stopped, he turned around, he went to her, he spoke to her, and he escorted her all the way home. And that's when I realized how I was disconnected. How could it be that he's that way and I'm this way? And as I explored the concept and I realized, Achrei Pe'ulos Nimshachim HaLevavos, it occurred to me that perhaps the trick is to, even if I'm not doing it yet fully from intent, get myself to do the type of activities that will end point result in a change in my personality and make that become the full expression of who I am. Now, not to advertise to any of the yeshivas, but I have to give this to Rav Bina from the Tivarye, for those that don't recognize him. I want to give a shout out to something that he did that I thought was very, very wise and fits in with the point that we're making right now. You might not know this, but out there's a problem of over-technology. People being too connected to their devices, right? Who's sick of hearing about it? Everybody, right? But the problem is that it's really a problem. So Rav Bina came up with a solution that I want to suggest to everybody who might have this problem, or if it's not the problem of specifically devices, but TV shows, or whatever the problem is exactly, where you know you're not doing the right thing. He challenged these guys, and he put a reward at the end of it, for just 1 month, disconnect. Just 1 month. 1 month, force yourself to do that action. And he was hoping, of course, achar pe'ulos nimshachos halevavos. He was hoping that once that action took place, that would have the mesmerizing effect and transform those personalities, that ultimately they come out with an in-sync personality that doesn't want to be involved in those things, at the same time acting out by not being involved in those things. And what he quotes, and quoted to me originally, was a 75% success rate. Meaning that after the month was up of enforced doing this, 75% at least made it a couple of more months into the year. So just a food for thought for people that can identify. So basically, and this is the second to last slide, we have just one more. We've come full circle. I just want to summarize the whole idea that I've been trying to present. We started out with the problem of disconnecting, where we do things we know are stupid, where we feel intellectually are not the right thing to do. We do them anyway, we laugh about them, and we continue to do them, we don't change. We investigated and we found that, well, the key is, if the personality part of you, the intent part of you, is strengthened and enhanced enough, it could regain control of that automatic and autonomic function of doing the wrong thing. But in order to do that, you need to get to that personality, change it, make it strong enough and great enough to be able to do it. But the irony is, the only way we learn to be able to do that is through doing the actions in the first place, doing correct actions. Which means a person has to now, at one level, make a decision that they're going to purify by changing their actions first, hope that it then changes and strengthens their entire personality to enhance it to the point where it's automatic for you to do the right action, and then you could be successful. The Rambam, in the very last halacha, in Hilchos Mikvaos, has a beautiful yesod that fits right into this ultimate message. He's talking there about Tumah and Tahara, and he wants to make sure that people realize, of course, that these things are not, there's no mamashas to it. And he makes the following point. The whole thing is taloi b'kavanas halev. Lefichach amru chachamim tevel tavah v'loch usak ki'ilu lo tavah. Everything depends on your heart. Afal b'ken remez yesh b'davar k'shem she'am akaven libo letaher kevan she'tavel tahar afal b'shel nischadish b'gufo davar kach ha'makaven libo letaher nafsho Belibo lifrosh me'oton ha'etzos v'hevi nafsho b'mei adeos tahu. He says it's exactly analogous in terms of changing our personalities. If a person makes the effort and is set and convinces himself this is the way to go, and really makes that effort to be metaher his personality, he will then, through that ishtadlus, get siyach d'shmayas, he says at the end, and hopefully successfully develop himself into a pure, holy personality, which will then just mimela have actions that are totally in sync and congruent with that high level of Kedusha.